Thursday, October 7th, 9:02 p.m., Washington, D.C. The Selkie couldn't expect the teams guarding the target to use the same route to his condo twice in a row. However, the closer they got, the fewer options they had. There were only two main approaches to the neighborhood, and if they didn't use this one today, they would likely use it tomorrow. She got lucky. Today they picked this route. She stood at a public phone kiosk a mile away from Michael's place. She was dressed as a man, in boots, baggy jeans, an oversized jacket, with a short and well-trimmed fake beard. As she'd expected, they had ramped up the level of protection, and these guys would be quicker on the draw than a mobster's bodyguard. They'd be firing as soon as they spotted her. Given the location and logistics of the neighborhood, the Selkie eliminated the target's condo as a place to do the deletion. Trying for a hit on a convoy was also risky. Rockets were iffy. She had heard of cases where missiles had hit ordinary windshield glass at an angle and bounced off without exploding. And as for a bomb, a big enough charge to be sure of a kill would probably be picked up by an electronic sniffer or even a bomb dog. Besides, given how she had failed before, she wanted to do this up close and personal. The cane was out, but a knife or bare hands had a certain appeal. The only viable alternative for a deletion now was to do it where the target wouldn't be constantly surrounded by guards, and in such a way that nobody would know he'd been hit until she had plenty of time to get away. Given her options, the only place that would fit was a place considered secure. She'd have to kill him inside Net Force headquarters. Friday, October 8th, 9:05 a.m., Quantico. Getting yourself or some illegal object into a secure area when you weren't supposed to was not as hard as most people would like to believe. Offhand, the Selkie knew of at least four ways to smuggle a firearm onto a plane. The little pistol she now had tucked into the waistband of her pantyhose was a three-shooter with triple-stack two-inch barrels. At close range, the non-metal gun would kill a man as dead as the biggest steel cowboy six-shooter ever made. The piece wouldn't pass a hard object scan, but standing on its end, it would likely skate by a fluoro scanner, and it would go through any standard security metal detector on the planet without a blip. Strapped to her right inner thigh, almost to her groin, was a sheath knife, also of ceramic, full tang, with a plastic handle. Net Force was a level 3 through level 1 building. That meant that getting into the building itself needed only L3 techniques. More private areas would have tighter wards, palm or retinal scanners, knuckle readers, Vox codes, and such. With even the smallest computer knowledge, it was easy enough to find low-level employees, secretaries, receptionists, maintenance people, who had worked for NetForce only a short time. Thus it was that Christine Wesson, a not-too-ugly brunette with brown eyes, aged 29, came to the end of her short and probably undistinguished life. And now, a woman who looked enough like Wesson to pass for her to anybody who didn't know her very well, wearing her clothes, was inside Net Force HQ. Christine herself was wrapped in plastic bags in her bathtub, under 100 or so pounds of melting crushed ice. Sooner or later, of course, the office where Wesson worked would probably notice she had not shown up. They might call her apartment and get the answering machine. No problem, unless for some reason those concerned thought to check the building's security computer. To stall that, the Selkie had asked more or less politely if Christine would call her supervisor in the office supply section in which she worked and tell her she would be a few hours late. Then a timed email would show up at the supervisor's terminal from Wesson, explaining that things had run long, a lot longer than anybody but the Selkie knew. At the least, the email would buy the rest of the day, which should be more than enough. Friday, October 8th, 12:18 p.m., Quantico. Tony went through her jurors. She was the only woman working out. There were a few other men in the gym today, but Rusty was not among them. When she'd told him she wasn't going to be sleeping with him anymore, she thought he'd taken it rather well. No obvious anger, no tears, just a kind of surprised acceptance. A brunette in office clothes walked to the water fountain, smiled, and nodded at Tony, then went into the locker room. Tony dismissed her from her thoughts, but a moment later the brunette came out, all upset. "Excuse me, miss. There's a lady having some trouble in there. She looks like she's having some kind of... Can you help?" Tony nodded. Sure. She followed the brunette into the locker room. Friday, October 8th, 12:18 p.m., Quantico. Jay Gridley and John Howard had joined Michaels in the small conference room.
Jay?
Okay, boss, here's the way it lays out. It looks as if Plekhanov's been trying to buy himself a government or two. We think he's got a good chance of deciding who the president and prime ministers for two, maybe three, CIS governments are going to be.
Michaels said, You think he's planning some kind of coup?
Jay shrugged. Given the way this guy moves, yeah, I'd have to say it's a possibility.
Colonel?
My best-case scenario for the operation to collect Mr. Plekhanov comes in at 78%.
I want to see it.
Sir, right here.
His secretary came in. Commander, Tony Fiorella on the private line. He waved her off.
Gentlemen, let me take this call. Hello?
Commander Michaels, this is Christine Wesson from Supply. I was working out in the gym, and Subcommander Fiorella asked me to call you. She's had an accident. Medical is on the way, but I think maybe she's got a broken leg.
A broken leg?
One of the exercise machines fell over on her. Between you and me, she's in a lot of pain.
I'm on my way.
The two men looked up at him.
You two put your heads together and see what more sense you can make out of this mess. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Sure thing, boss.
Sir.
Michaels started for the hall. Friday, October 8th, 12:28 p.m., Quantico. Half in and half out of the shower stall, the sulky held the gun aimed at the woman sitting cross-legged on the tile floor inside. Fiorella twitched.
Keep your hands on your head, the sulky said.
You can't get away with this.
Uh-huh.
You're not as good as you think, Maura Sullivan. That surprised her. How the hell had they found that out? She had a quick spasm of panic, fought it down. Sullivan was just another name now, one more disposable ID. Still.
We're going to have a little talk before I leave, the Selkie said.
The woman was scared, and well, she should be. But she said,
I don't think so.
Another gutsy woman. Damn. Too bad she had to kill her.
Tony,
came a voice from outside the locker room's door.
In here, the Selkie said. Hurry!
She heard the sound of fast footsteps.
She grinned.
Friday, October 8th, 8:37 p.m., Grozny. Plekhanov didn't need to use VR to see that tripwires were broken all over his walkways. They knew who he was, and they were probing every aspect of his life they could reach. He didn't think they could find much, but he would add one more piece of insurance, something to make them think. One more obstacle to make certain they stumbled and could not recover in time to catch him. He put in a call to the rifle.